And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be Craig Coben, Yannis Janais, and Dan Crawford. In this episode, we're going to be discussing the 2-2 draw for Fulham against Derby County at Craven Cottage. We have much to discuss regarding this match, but I have to welcome my co-host back to the show first. Mr. Coben, how you doing?
Hi, Russ. Thanks for inviting me back on.
Well, listen, Craig, you were at that match, so I definitely look forward to your take on what happened at Craven Cottage.
I look forward to discussing it with you. It was an interesting game, a lot of talking points.
Absolutely. There are a ton of talking points here. Yannis, how are you doing, my friend up in Canada? How's the weather?
Well, there are parts of my body I can't feel right now. And even my cat is getting really antsy because of all this cold. I'm very good. Excellent game yesterday. Another game where we earned a lot of brownie points, but didn't come away with the result that maybe we deserved.
Yeah. No, listen, like Craig said, there are many talking points, and I know we're going to go through it, and it's disappointing. I'm looking at it as 2 points dropped. I'm curious if you guys feel the same way. But before we get into the show, I have to welcome back. It's been a little bit. Dan Crawford to the show from HammyEnd.com. Dan, how you doing, my friend?
Yeah, I'm very good, Russ. Good to be with you all.
Hello.
Okay. All right, guys, let's get into the show. Let's start with our opening thoughts on what we saw in this match. Yannis and I watched the replay. Craig and Dan were at the match, so we all have different perspectives on it. But Dan, I'm going to start with you. Just an overall view of what you watched at Craven Cottage on Saturday.
Well, I was encouraged, you know, because in the run-up to the game, there was a lot of talk about Derby's 7-match unbeaten run, or winning run, rather. They'd gone more than 500 minutes without conceding a goal. And, you know, it looked like it was going to be a real stern test, and so it proved. But Fulham were more than up to the task of playing against the division's form side. And I think everybody's already hinted at it. You can consider yourself quite disappointed at only picking up 1 point. And that's a good place to be, that the performances are coming. Obviously, the sort of defensive lapses that I'm sure we'll go on to talk about were very discouraging. But overall, there's plenty of positives to take from the performance. And when you consider that Fulham were missing key players, there was no Chris Martin to start with, obviously. And then Thomas Callas went off very early, and they had to reorganise when Sigurdsson was replaced as well. So factoring all of that in, it was a very encouraging display.
Very good take there, Dan. And seriously, we're going to be talking about Thomas Callas coming up, because I definitely want your feedback on him going off injured, unfortunately, and how Fulham basically worked their way through that. Like I said, there was a change in second half, and did it work? You know, having Kevin McDonald go in at center back and taking out Ragnar Sigurdsson at the half. We'll talk about that when we talk about the second half. All right, over to you, Yannis. Your thoughts on this match overall?
Extremely entertaining game between two very good sides. I mean, Derby came in form. I mean, Reading found out a few weeks ago what that can go out the window. I will be disappointed with the result. As Dan said, you know, it's an encouraging result. And I said on Twitter last night, the upcoming transfer window becomes really critical because, you know, I've said it for a while. I think we're one or two players short, but I do think we're very close. We're punching toe-to-toe with the best teams in the division and coming away with, you know, reasonable results. So can we pick up one or two players in the transfer deadline that will get us, so it's levitate us to six? Because really, whether you finish sixth or third doesn't matter. I mean, it's just as long as you get into the playoffs, we're not going to catch Brighton and Newcastle. Good performance, just disappointing we didn't come away with the three. But a sign of a good side is, you know, a team that defends well, will hit you on the break and punish you for the few mistakes you make. And all credit to Derby for getting a point yesterday.
That's a very good point. Can we learn something from the performance of Derby County? Because I've heard that from their fans, talking about how they defended well and how they were able to get the point. Can we learn something from them? Do Fulham need to look at what they did against Fulham? I'm talking about defending and beating teams on the break when they get that opportunity, even though we've been on the front foot for the majority of these matches. There might be opportunities when we're up against it, and then we have to beat teams on the break. and we have to defend well. Can we learn something from Derby County? It's very interesting. Over to you, Craig. Your thoughts on the match and also what I'm sharing here about the Derby County performance. Can we learn something?
I think we can learn quite a lot from the way in which Derby County managed to draw this match. Fulham dominated play. The short passing looked brilliant. We had by far the most possession in the match. Our style requires a very high technical level. It puts a lot of pressure on the goalkeeper and on the defenders. And as we could see, that any mistakes get punished very quickly. So while we had most of the possession, I always felt we looked vulnerable on the break. And certainly the first goal is a good reflection of that. Teams know to sit back against Fulham and to counterattack very quickly with through balls. We were punished with the first goal and on the second goal because of poor marking on the corner. So what I would say is Fulham really impressed. They are great to watch. We have some outstanding players, but this possession-oriented style needs a little bit of pragmatism at the back, or at least a higher technical level at the back in order to sustain it, because it is actually a relatively high-risk strategy. We're not throwing men forward Kevin Keegan style, but it still is a high-risk strategy to pass it out from the back, to overload wherever the ball is in order to do the short passing, because as soon as we lose the ball, suddenly we're on the back heels.
You know what's interesting, Craig, is that on our preview show on the FFC Roundup, where we were previewing this match, I read some quotes from Steve McLaren. He basically talked, I'm paraphrasing, about that we needed to take advantage of them on the break. And that's exactly what they did in this match. They, you know, their strategy, basically, he said it in the presser leading up to the match, that this was going to be what they were going to do. And they actually executed what he wanted them to do. So then the onus should be on Fulham to, when they do counter quickly, to defend well. And like you said, it's those little mistakes, you know, that 10, I go back to that 10% that Mike Gregg keeps talking about, that can be the difference, especially in the second half of the season. We need to, you know, they need to look at what went wrong here. I'm talking about Slavica and his coaching staff and the players, and fix it moving forward. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. I mean, in defense of the players, mistakes are inevitable. I mean, you even see that with Guardiola and Claudio Bravo and at Manchester City and John Stone at Manchester City. But we need either we have to get better players in the back or we need to modify the way we play. It's too risky of a strategy because our style is to overload where the ball is so that we always have an extra man, pass it around. But when we lose it, suddenly, you know, the teams know to do a through ball or a long diagonal ball, and suddenly it's one-on-one or two-on-two on the break when we are extremely vulnerable. So unless we do make some of those key purchases during the transfer window in January, I think we may have to look at a slightly more pragmatic way of playing. And I think the loss of Kallas is particularly significant because he is our best center back. Losing him will put even more pressure because I don't think that McDonald, when moving back to center back, or Sigurdsson are nearly as good on the ball as Kallas.
Okay, very good. Dan, I want to go to you. I want to get your thoughts on what Craig just shared here because I find it interesting breaking down this match and also talking about big picture with Fulham as the transfer window was about to open up in January.
Yeah, well, I think we need three things in the transfer window, at least from my point of view. You need a goalkeeper because there are issues with the goalkeeping situation. You need a commanding centre-back who will be a leader and a vocal organiser of the team. We're lacking that at the moment. You may be able to get by without that sort of addition, but if you're wanting to cement the place in the playoffs, like Craig and Yanis have been talking about, that's essential. And obviously, you need a forward, a genuine centre forward, because it's clear from the way the game panned out that Jokanović, once Martin is unavailable, doesn't necessarily trust Matt Smith and doesn't have confidence in Corley Woodrow. So you're going to need another forward. Just on the pragmatism point, which is really interesting, I think Jokanović has already tweaked his formation a couple of times. So I don't think we're playing the same system as we started the season with two very distinct holding midfielders, if you remember.
Yep.
It was McDonald and Tunnicliffe against Newcastle, and then it quickly became McDonald and
Parker
for the first few weeks of the season. And there isn't that double shield at the base of the midfield anymore.
That's a good point.
Kanovic has been convinced that McDonald is comfortable enough to do that himself, and the energy of somebody like Johansson mitigates against the loss of a more defensively minded midfielder, because Johansson can get about the pitch well. But it does leave you light in on transition when you're talking about McLaren's game plan, and that's always the risk. But I think Jokanović was trying to spark something at home, especially where we were far too passive or finding it far too difficult to beat teams or break down teams. You sat off and nullified the threats we had. So look, I think this is it's a learning curve for these players. This league is unforgiving in terms of what it tests your team with, because anybody can beat anybody. And actually, the results and the performances over the last sort of 6 weeks have been encouraging in terms of the style of football and what we've played. There definitely needs to be improvement, but I think we're certainly heading in the right direction.
Okay, very good take there, Dan. Now, you're looking at this as a work in progress, and as you mentioned, while you're talking about this, you're right, because he has tweaked the system since the beginning of the season. And then the approach lately at Craven Cottage has changed as well. So that's a very good point by you. Giannis, before we move on, I want to get your thoughts on what Craig and Dan just shared.
Bang on the money. And the goalkeeping thing for me is right now an issue. Because, questions are obviously being asked about this. And I'm sure Slava's looking around to see if he can pick up anybody on loan. That the price is going to be steep come the January window in terms of purchasing, but loans are certainly out there. Something that I thought about last night, though, in terms of, Chris Martin not being available yesterday, if maybe one of the ways to break down teams in this division is to go a little bit small, that we don't necessarily have to have the target man up front if maybe we look to bring in a little bit more speed in. Now, I know I'm going to sound like a moaner and a groaner here because I'm a big Corley Woodrow fan, but someone maybe of that type that can unlock defenders in different ways and maybe slightly adjust the way that we play, just slightly, instead of us having the target man up front. I don't know if that's something that Slav has looked at, but I will tell you this much. If he wants us to get into the playoffs, this is a hugely critical transfer window. He doesn't need many players, in my view, but he needs to get the right players. He needs to get the balance right. And I think it starts with the keeping.
Okay, very good. It's funny. I would highly recommend you go into hamian.com to read a take by Dan Crawford. Dan,
yeah,
very
good take. It was about... excellent. Yeah, it was excellent.
It was a very good take. I highly recommend you going to hamian.com to read Dan's recent column and about David Button. So please do check that out. Dan, very well. Great job. Great analysis there, my friend. I just want to mention that before we move on.
Well, thank you very much. I'm chuffed.
All right, guys, let's move on. I always think it's kind of interesting to hear what the managers had to say after the match. So I now have quotes from both Steve McLaren and Slavisa Jokanović. And guys, Craig and Dan, since you're both there, I'm going to give you each a manager. And Craig, I'm going to give you the quotes from Steve McLaren. I want to get your thoughts on what he had to share after the match. And there's also a quote that I picked up from the video that's on the Derby County website. So I'm going to share that at the very end. It's not on the actual article that was written with quotes from McLaren. It's something that I actually had to transcript myself. And so I'm going to share that because I find that quote that I'm going to share with you very interesting. These are quotes from Steve McLaren that you can see on the Derby County website. And then, like I said, I got one quote at the very end from a video that you can actually watch on the Derby County website. Here are the quotes, Craig, and I want your thoughts on it. Quote, "We stayed in the game and thought fought like crazy in what was a great game of football between two top teams. I probably would have taken a point beforehand. In the first half, I thought we were excellent. We should have had more goals. In the second half, we had our backs against the wall as Fulham came into it. It was disappointing to concede just before halftime, and they were buoyed by it. They were bombarding us a bit in the second half, and I was looking for us to find a way back into the match. We had to show character to come back, and it was a different test to be behind in a game. I wanted to see if we could fight back, and we did that. We grew back into it, and the substitutes made an impact again. I think a point in the end was at least what we deserved. The most important thing is not the result, but the spirit and the performances had everything today apart from the 3 points. We've had a great run, and we're still unbeaten. And now I'm going to add this quote that I got from the website, from a video. This is taken right after the match. Here's another quote from Steve McClaren that I actually got myself. I had to watch it a few times to get this direct quote. Here it is. Quote, this is talking about giving up the goal at the end of the half. Okay. So this is about the first half. Just want to mention that, correct? Quote, it was a huge disappointment losing a goal just before halftime after totally dominating. Focus on those two last words that I gave you, totally dominating. So I'm curious your thoughts on what he shared after the match, the quotes that I gave to you from the Derby County website, and also from the video that I got off of the Derby County website.
Interesting. Look, I don't agree with Steve McClaren that Derby County was dominating the match, even in the first half. They scored a goal somewhat against the run of play. With a very quick counter, a sort of a diagonal pass from number 7, I can't remember his name now, Russell, to Tom Ince, and it was off a mistake which should have been cut out by Sigurdsson and wasn't. But what it does show you, I think, is that to some degree, Derby County came expecting not to have a lot of the possession and to be looking to counterattack. And so, in other words, as long as Fulham were passing the ball in front of Derby County, Derby, in a sense, felt like it was in control of the match.
Right.
And interestingly, the best attacks and most promising attacks by Fulham in the first half came down the right side, and especially when we got behind their defenders and could cross the ball in. And in fact, that's exactly how we scored the goal just before halftime. But it is interesting, and I think we've discussed this on previous shows, going back to even the loss against Birmingham City. Teams are taking almost kind of Leicester City approach to us, yep, conceding possession and trying to hit us on the counterattack. And I think that's how McLaren describes domination, which is counterintuitive at a lot of levels.
That's a great point. He's looking at it as he had a game plan and they followed it, so he sees that as dominating. So that's very interesting. And he was talking about the first half. So very good analysis there, Craig, the way that you talked about it and bringing up the approach that other teams now are coming to treat us like Leicester City did last year. You know, Leicester City played to beat teams on the break, and that's what Derby County did, and they had a game plan and they totally stuck to it. Okay, Dan, I'm going to go to you right now. Here are quotes from Slavica. This is from the head coach reaction. It's directly from the article. I'm going to read basically the article to you with the quote. So here it is. Quote, I cannot be completely satisfied. My team offered many interesting things, but we paid a very expensive price after some mistakes. They didn't put us under stress and scored 2 goals so easily. We played all the football. We were the dominant team. We created chances and scored 2 goals. But it wasn't enough to win this game. It's not the first time, and we need to think about the problem and try and improve ourselves and be more solid and more competitive. So many times we paid an expensive price. We have to be stronger. Now, into the article says, with Chris Martin ineligible against his parent club, Jokanović opted to play minus an out-and-out striker and was content with how things went at the end of the pitch. Quote, we went with Floyd Ayite and Sonny Lukko in this area. Floyd scored the goal. We created many, many chances, and we offered the better football. My side must be clinical after their mistakes, and this was the situation that we found today in the game. But from another side, I can be satisfied. In my opinion, we played very good football. When we started being more solid and cut out those mistakes, we're going to be higher in the table. and we're going to be more competitive. And then it goes on to talk about the situation with Tomas Kalas, and here's another quote. It's a hamstring at the moment. I don't know exactly what happened with him. Guaranteed it will be 2 weeks. He'll be out of the squad, but I don't have more information than that at this moment. All right, Dan, those are quotes from Slavisa after the match. What are your thoughts? What stands out to you?
Well, I mean, I'm sure we'll get to a section where we talk about how the managers did. I don't know if you still do that. You certainly have on previous shows. But
yep.
I felt Jokanović got a few things wrong yesterday. In selection, in personnel, in the way he set up the team and sort of how he gambled at half time with taking off Sigurdsson, who I don't think was injured. He may have been taken off as a precaution, but it certainly wasn't picked up in the way the Kalas change was. But on his quotes, we hear this sort of thing from Jokanović now quite regularly about wanting to cut out defensive mistakes and, you know, being more clinical and killing a game off when we're on top of teams. So some fans find it repetitive. I think it's because his English probably isn't good enough to significantly vary everything he says every time. So I don't worry too much about that. A couple of things, though. The description of what he did up front of playing Aite and Luko in Martin's position is probably accurate. Because when I saw the team, Russ,
yep,
I thought that Piazon was the most natural forward for the system that...
Yeah, I agree with that, Dan. Go ahead.
Jokanović likes to play, particularly when you're up against two very physical and imposing centre-backs, Keo, well known for his sort of robust defending. And Piazon played all his youth football and all his football in South America as a centre-forward. And he would have given Fulham a bit more presence so that the ball wouldn't bounce off. You didn't have there wouldn't be anybody lightweight. And I thought that was an error. The only other interesting thing is obviously he himself latches on to the significance of Kalas being out for the remainder of the calendar year and possibly longer, which is a real problem. You remember that the big dip in form that Fulham had in September and early October coincided with Kalas being out of the team for a significant portion of that run. And I don't think that is merely a coincidence. He's clearly Fulham's best defender. And I think Craig and Yanis have hit on the key learning point from this game, which is that Derby came with a game plan. They executed it flawlessly. But by our defensive ineptitude, we allowed them to go away with a point, having managed two shots on target, which is disappointing to say the least.
Yeah. No, very, very interesting take there, Dan. And yes, we will be rating the manager at the very end of the show because I want your take on Slavisa at the very end. We're definitely going to get your thoughts on that when we wrap up the show. Yanis, I'm now going to go to you. Feel free to share thoughts on what both Dan and Craig shared, but I also want to get your thoughts on the starting 11 before we really break down the match into two halves here. So thoughts on the starting 11, my friend.
Well, the last two words of what Steve McLaren had to say about his assessment in the first half, I'd like to replace with two words of my own, which is village idiot. I don't know what game he was watching. I have absolutely no idea. That's number one. Number two, something that Dan put in his hammy end, his commentary, and Dan, your permission, I'd like to quote you on this one because I think it's very telling. You said, and I quote, "The sight of Tom Kearney bellowing at his keeper after the concession of goal showed that his teammates felt it was a soft one to concede and suggest that there might be widespread weariness sitting in about the custodian." If you've got a back four who are nervous about their keeper, it's a problem. They just don't play the same way. You can afford to take risks and make mistakes knowing you've got someone behind you that's not going to lose you the game. It's not a case of going to win you, but it's not going to make the silly mistakes that are expected. So that's number two. In terms of the lineup, The Sigurdsson one was intriguing when he was subbed at halftime, and I think that was just more to send a message, if anything. And if that was the message, fair enough. I mean, you got Maddle to come off the bench. I wasn't particularly enamoured with the lineup. It looked a little disjointed. But then I looked at the bench and I saw more horrors there. I know I'm going to get a lot of shit for this one. I wasn't happy with Humphreys being in the squad, because I think there's been a clamour in the last couple of weeks because of what he's doing, you know, the second squad, about the goals he's scoring. And we're overlooking players, decent players. And I'm going to mention Woodrow again, who are rotting. Lasevegan being another one. And I think I'm really big on not losing faith in the youngsters. And I think it's a dangerous road to take. We need the full squad for the rest of the season. Lineup, I mean, going up against Derby County, you knew they were going to go and try and defend. Vidra was always going to be important for them up front. Ince is a very good player, we know that. But having said that, regardless of the lineup, Russ, we still asked a lot of questions, and we still dominated play, and we created chances, and we scared the bejeevers out of them. But it has to start at the back. And our keeping right, I said it, Button has become undone, and he has. And I think it's now critical in terms of, you know, Slava now making the change.
Well, listen, I'm glad that we're talking about this, and I'm glad that Dan wrote what he had to write. And like I said, I'll say it again, go to hamman.com to read what Dan had to say after the match, several articles, and check out his one about David Button. All right, Craig, I'm going to go to you. Just thoughts on the starting 11. Do you agree with Giannis's assessment, or do you have anything else you'd like to share?
Well, the first problem we had with the starting 11 is, of course, that we couldn't play Chris Martin because he's on loan from Derby County, and so we had to find a solution for up front. And it looked to me that we stuck with a 4-2-3-1, pretty similar lineup to what we've been using in the past. And up front, we had kind of a Yite and a Luko rotating back and forth, who would be the one and who would be in the next row of three. But it does seem to me, as I can't remember, one of you guys mentioned before, we have, I think, settled as well with the two midfielders, deeper midfielders, in Johansson and McDonald. With Kearney often coming very deep as well, again, trying to dominate possession. So I thought overall the lineup looked like, broadly speaking, we've settled on a certain lineup, and some of the new players or some of the players that we've seen earlier in the season, they're not really getting a starting place. You know, you think of Adoy, you think of Niskan's Kebanu, ton of clips. So some of those other players, I think it's now clear they're not in the first 11 for Slavisa. Beyond that, I think we had the problem with Kallis getting injured earlier in the middle part of the first half, and what to do about it. Substituted Model in there, but Model was playing right center. Model was playing a right center back. And it was quite clear that that we did have problems in that area, which I guess were resolved at halftime by moving McDonald back to center back and putting in Parker. But overall, I don't think it seems to me that Slavisa has started to settle on a system, the 4-2-3-1. He had the issue that Martin wasn't available, and I thought he came up with a reasonable solution to it.
Okay, interesting. Dan, back to you. You've already talked a little bit about the situation with, you would have had Piazon being the striker up front. But beyond that, any other thoughts you'd like to add about the starting 11? Then we'll get into the game.
Not really. I'd just like to come back on a couple of things.
Sure, go ahead.
It's about Humphreys, really, and I Giannis is perfectly entitled to his view, and he expressed it clearly, but Humphreys is a player who's been on a hot streak for a couple of seasons. And I remember, it's a very, very long time ago now, but I remember going to watch a reserve game at Motspur Park a couple of years ago, just after Fulham had signed Humphreys. And he actually ended up sitting next to me. And we were talking, I think he played one or two under 18 games at that point for us. And he was talking very animatedly about what his plans were and how he wanted to develop as a footballer, and what he wanted to do at Fulham. And I thought that was very interesting for a very young man, that he had very clear goals that he wanted to get to. And the reason he's on the bench is very simple. He's scoring goals. And you could even see from the little cameo, and it was only a little cameo because he was waiting about 5 minutes to come on, you could see from the little cameo that he was a man in form and with confidence. He took one high ball beautifully down.
The chested ball was very nice, Dan.
And he played, and he chested one off majestically as well. And he was very keen to get in and around the box. Now, football's a game of confidence. He has confidence and he is flying at the moment. You could tell that. Woodrow, on the other hand, has no confidence. He's lost a lot of belief in himself. And he's regressed as a footballer. I would say he's not the type of he's not the type of player we need at this level. I would go further and say, unfortunately, because I was a big fan of Cooley, he's probably not going to make it in the Championship. He's probably a League One striker, maybe a League Two striker now. And Smith, similarly, I don't think he'll get you enough goals in the Championship. So I think the big question becomes, what do you do about that in the transfer window? So I didn't have a problem with the personnel in the lineup, as it were. It was more how they were deployed. And I was very pleased to see Humphreys get his opportunity, because you need to show to young players that you're not a closed shop. If you play well for the under-23s, you are putting yourself directly in the thoughts of the manager. And that's what came through from that decision on Saturday.
Well, Dan, on top of that, Humphreys is out of contract at the end of the season. So if you're serious about him and you want to sign him to a new deal, a situation like this is probably a good one to at least get him on the bench, and then you actually play him to show him that, hey, listen, we're thinking about you. We're going to get you in this match. No, Chris Martin, we're going to get you in the 18, and you might get a chance. So Fulham might have played him, obviously, for his confidence right now. But there's another benefit here, Dan, is that maybe they're showing him that you could be in our future plans. Do you see where I'm going on that?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's already been talk of a lot of clubs sniffing around, given his goal scoring record. He's a Mancunian, so he wouldn't be averse to moving back up to they'll shoot me. He was born in Oldham. But he's a big Manchester United fan. He would not be averse, I assume, to moving back up north if that opportunity presented itself. So it's very important that you show to him there's a pathway through to the first team.
Right.
And actually, I think he's good enough. I really do. Not necessarily to be the leading striker for us, but he's certainly good enough to be knocking around the first team squad at this stage.
Okay, very good there, Dan. All right. Okay. Craig, I'm going to go to you. I'm going to give you some key moments. I'm going to let you walk us through your thoughts on the first half, and then Dan will take the second half. And in between, Giannis, I'm going to go to you because I'm going to share halftime stats, and I want your thoughts on the halftime stats if they match up what you watched on the replay. So let's start with some information, and then Craig will go right to you. Fulham had a few opportunities to score in the first half. They actually started brightly for the first, I'd say, 10 to 15 minutes. They looked like the dominant side. Eventually, Derby County did come into the match, but for the first 10, 15 minutes, we were pretty dominant. I will mention that we actually had a very nice opportunity to score in the 29th minute. It was on a volley by Kevin McDonald that did test the goalkeeper, Scar Carson. Then I think you have the situation that changes the game a little bit. And that's when Tomas Kalas comes off in the 31st minute. Like you guys have been talking about, I truly believe he's our best defender. So to lose him is a loss. He comes off in the 31st minute. Unfortunately, in the 34th minute, you have the mistake, the slip by Ragnar Sigurdsson that leads to Tom Ince scoring to give him the lead, to give Derby County the lead. However, and the first minute of stoppage time, Floyd Ayite taps in a shot to make it 1-1 at the half. This was a pass by Ryan, really nice pass by Ryan Fredericks that set up Ayite for a basic tap in. So those are the key moments I wrote down. for the first half. Craig, I'll go to you. Just share with me your observations of the first half.
A couple of observations. I think first, in the first half, we set the tone with our short passing game. I do think that we dominated possession for most of the first half. We started very brightly, but even as Derby County got back into the match, we still had the lion's share of possession of the ball. And we showed quite a lot of skill and determination. And again, as I said before, we were overloading the side with the ball in order to maintain that sort of possession dominance. The problem, of course, was on some of the counterattacks. Even before the goal, we looked a little bit vulnerable. You had Matei Sidra and Tom Ince in particular causing some problems for our fullbacks. It's interesting, the first goal that was scored, how quickly it materialized.
Russell's pass,
I mean, he has his back to the goal. He's in the Derby half of the pitch, and yet he just does a long diagonal ball, and next thing you know, Ince is squaring up to score. So again, it's a reminder that possession may be 9/10 of the law, but it's not 9/10 of a football match. What I do think was also encouraging in the first half, however, was that Fulham really was able to get down the wing, especially the right wing. You mentioned McDonald's shot. I mean, it was from a very tight angle. It was well struck, but from a very tight angle.
Right.
But over and over again, our best opportunities came from the right side. And, in the end, we were vindicated because Fredericks was able to beat his man and get the cross in for Ayite. I guess the last observation I would make is in the first half, we insisted on playing the ball out and not hoofing up the pitch, which is visually very nice to see, but it does create its own problems. And there were a couple of times, I think two or three times in the first half, where Malone, our left back, started dribbling the ball towards the center of the pitch, and he's just dribbling, loses possession. And then again, we're a little bit on the back foot trying to defend because we're out of shape. And Derby County is swarming against us. So my overall verdict in the first half was we dominated play, yet the 1-1 score at halftime wasn't entirely unfair to us.
Okay, very interesting. And I do want to mention, you already talked about the situation with Ince. He actually had one situation where he was slightly offside, and that was a scary situation. So he was troubling our fullbacks. And I'm glad that you brought that up because that is something to be worried about. You know, and again, that was one thing that stood out to me when I watched the replay was yes, they did not have all these opportunities. They only had two shots on target, but there was that situation with Ince in the first half that was worrying. All right. Very, very interesting.
I think we looked vulnerable is what I would say.
That's
even
a good
though
way to
they
put
didn't
it.
Have very many opportunities, they looked like they always looked like they could score off the break. And so that's why it's a little bit different than a goal that's completely against the run of the play. That's a bit of a fluke. It wasn't the case.
No. And I'm glad that you clarified that because that's exactly what it looked like. We looked extremely vulnerable, and that's something that Slavisa and his staff and the players need to look at and try to fix because they looked very dangerous every time they had an opportunity. They did. That's the unfortunate part of this because they took advantage of two of their opportunities very well. All right, Giannis, I'm going to go to you. I'm going to share some halftime stats. Mm-hmm. Want your thoughts about what Craig shared. And then also if the halftime stats match up what you watched. Possession at the half, 62% to 38% in favor of Fulham. Total shots, 7-5 in favor of Fulham. 2-1 on target in favor of Fulham. Corners were even at 1 apiece. Crosses 9-2 in favor of Fulham. Tackles 5-3 in favor of Fulham. Attempted passes 313 to 192 in favor of Fulham. Attacking passes over 100 more, 161 to 60 in favor of Fulham. Passing accuracy 86% for Fulham, 75% for Derby County. Accurate passes 270 to 144 in favor of Fulham. Aerial duels in favor of Derby County 10-4 and fouls 10 for Fulham, 3 for Derby County. All right, Giannis, thoughts on the halftime stats. What do they tell you?
Lots of possession, lots of passing, lots of movement forward. This team, I'm struggling to remember the last time I've seen a team our team look so much fun. It's a fun team to watch. It really is.
I agree.
And, you know, gaming game out, we're you know, we go on social media and we view the responses of the fans to, you know, playing us, and they're all complimentary about the way we play. And so about the level of difficulty against Fulham. So huge kudos to Slava, because what he is doing, I mean, we can all agree and disagree about lineups and tactical changes and what have you. But the one thing that I hope we can all agree on is about the change of culture of this team, and that he's an extremely positive manager who will paint a positive spin on things. This is something that the players know about and obviously will read in the media. And even when results aren't going for us, he's still going to remain positive, always looking for the, you know, the things we can move forward with. And that first half is pretty similar to a lot of first halves we've had in recent weeks, where we've played very well, we've got off to a good start. And I'm sure that Slava and his coaching staff are working hard to make sure that the defensive mistakes are kept to a minimum. Going back to that thing that, you know, the statement though that Dan made earlier about, you know, if your captain turns around to the keeper and gives him a bollocking about a save he should have made, I think that, you know, it only takes 1 second, as Cluffy used to say. You can dominate as much as you want, but if your keeper can't make the simple saves, it really does undo the work, the hard work that's been undertaken, you know, in a match. And so I think in the big scheme of things, I think that's something that we've got to look closely on. But a good first half nonetheless.
Okay, very good there, my friend. Very good by both of you, breaking down the first half. Very good. All right, let's now move to the second half, Dan. I'm going to go to you. I'm just going to share some key moments and also something that I really want you to talk about, and that is what happened before the second half began. And that's Ragnar Sigurdsson comes off, Scott Parker comes on, and Kevin McDonald moves back to take his place at center back. So I want your thoughts on what was going through your mind, first of all, when they made the change, and did it work? How did it play out? So definitely want your thoughts about the shuffling there. But let's start with how the second half began. Fulham came out strong and looked like the stronger side to begin the second half. They definitely put the pressure on Derby County, and they were rewarded. In the 60th minute, you have the goal by Stefan Johansson, and Fulham take the lead 2-1. Unfortunately, 15 minutes later, they get the equalizer off of a corner on a header by Pierce. And again, this is a mistake. This was abysmal defending. And Dan, you and I talked off air. Please feel free to share your thoughts on this, because this really was poor. You know, again, we can argue about, was it a corner? We were talking about this off air. Should it have been a corner? We can talk about that, but that doesn't excuse the poor defending that led to the second goal for Derby County. And then a little further on in the 84th minute, you have the situation with Lucas Piazon, takes the free kick right outside of the box and hits the crossbar. And then in the second minute of stoppage time, Michael Maddow is given a yellow card for a foul on Bradley Johnson, but the referee did not play the advantages. Derby County could have been 2-on-1 on David Button there. So that's a situation as well, if you want to touch on that. So, Dan, I want to go to you, get your second half observations, and also talk about the change at halftime.
Yeah, so an awful lot happened in the second half for us.
Yes.
So if I miss out anything that you've asked me about, just tell me that I haven't spoken about it, okay? Because I found the second half fascinating, because it was one of those sort of pivotal 45 minutes, really. I think both Craig and Yanis have said that we're a bit shell-shocked by the Derby goal, and we had most of the play, but we didn't necessarily create as many chances as we should have done given the possession in the first half. So there's an argument for saying 1-1 was probably a fair scoreline at half-time. I was surprised that Sigurdsson didn't reappear. I didn't think he was having a good game. Far from it, given what the guys have already highlighted. But I don't like McDonald playing as a centre-back. I don't think that's a long-term solution. He's very good on the ball, but his marking, he's not a centre-back. And when we get on to talk about the corner and other things, then you'll see why. But he's not a specialist centre-back, so I'd rather like to avoid having him play there if it's possible. It's not to say he did a bad job, but he's not as accomplished as others. I thought Fulham came out and really took the game to Derby, played at a high tempo rather than just stroking the ball around in front of the opposition as we have done, looked to exploit space down the flanks. And the way they worked the second goal, Johansson got a bit of fortune about how it nicked in off Pierce eventually. But the way they worked the second goal with Aluko patiently waiting for the right moment to play in Johansson, and how they kept the pressure on Derby because they hadn't cleared the initial cross, was really impressive. You can be hypercritical and say for a long period at 2-1, Fulham had a lot of the pressure, and perhaps they should have been got that third goal. It's been the thing that's held us back, is we haven't been able to kill off teams. You look at that Wolves game, that mad, mad Wolves game, that I went up to, and I think my coat is still drying out from the monsoon in Molineux a couple of weeks ago. You look at the games where we haven't killed teams off, and it's staggering. And then, of course, you get the soft concession, if you like, of a goal. But you were never certain, you were never confident about Fulham holding on, because, as both the gentlemen have said, David Button is not inspiring confidence at the moment. I don't think anybody's talked about the moment where he tried to do a little drag flick past Ince on the edge of the
I remember box. That thing.
And what he actually ended up doing was kicking it against himself, and it very nearly went into the goal, which I don't know how he could have done that. Maybe only he could have managed it. But it very nearly was a very embarrassing moment. And then the corner itself, let's leave aside whether it was a corner or not, because I don't think it was, but I was at the wrong end of the stadium to see for certain, and the replay isn't necessarily conclusive on that regard. It's a corner. It's going to be an in-swinger the way Ince takes them from that side. So when you know as a goalkeeper that the zonal marking means you haven't got a player guarding the near post, and you know you've got a makeshift centre-back in there trying to track runners, when the ball comes into the six-yard box, and I think it's closer than 6 yards out when it gets in there, you've got to do something to try and disrupt the rhythm at that near post. That doesn't mean you come flying out and clatter people. It means you make a decisive move, because at the least you're going to do, you're going to upset the rhythm of a player running in. Pierce had a free header at that ball, and for some reason it looked like Aite was the closest to him because he shrugged off Malone. And it was just a mess, that goal, from start to finish. So, and I know that Stuart Gray and Jokanović worked very hard on drilling the players about their defensive set plays. So there'll be an inquest about that. But the goalkeeper is no longer inspiring confidence. He's never really come off his line. But you have to change things up, in my mind, when you're faced with that situation. It's probably too harsh to blame it all on him, but there's a percentage of culpability there. And then just finally, first of all, I've said my piece about Humphrey, so I won't say any more than it was just lovely to see another graduate from the academy, I think the 20th in 3.5 years, to make their senior debut for the football club. So we hope to see a lot more of the impressive young man in the future. But you're absolutely right, Russ. Fulham did get away with it right at the end, after Pierson had hit the bar with that free kick, when the referee made a number of baffling decisions for me, particularly not to book people who committed heinous challenges. He brought the play back to book Mardle, who could have gone for that. Maybe Fredericks would have bailed Fulham out. It's by no means certain, but he did get sent off in a similar position last season, or earlier this season, I'm trying to remember. I think it was against Birmingham. He's dicing with trouble there when you pull somebody back like that. And equally, the referee should have played on, because Johnson recovered his composure and was going through a goal. So I have every sympathy with the Derby supporters there. that was a clear goal scoring opportunity for the player, and equally they didn't play to a full advantage. But it was a really interesting second half. You had to draw breath at the end of it, and yet you still wondered how we hadn't quite managed to get over the line.
Great analysis. Seriously, Dan, very good job. I appreciate you doing that, my friend. All right, let's now move on to the full-time stats. And Giannis, I'll go to you first. Here are the full-time stats, and let's see if they tell the story of this match. Here are the full-time stats, my friend. Possession, 65% to 35% in favor of Fulham. Total shots, 18 to 7 in favor of Fulham. 6 to 2 on target in favor of Fulham. Corners were even at 4. Crosses, 23 to 8 in favor of Fulham. Tackles, 12 to 9 in favor of Fulham. Attempted passes, 630 to 341 in favor of Fulham. Attacking passes, 322 to 91 in favor of Fulham. Passing accuracy, 85% for Fulham, 72% for Derby County. Accurate passes, 537 to 248 in favor of Fulham. Aerial duels, 15 to 14 in favor of Derby County. And fouls, 16 to 12, more for Fulham. All right, Giannis, does this tell the story of this match? Do the stats tell us what happened here?
Yeah, it tells me the story of the last half a dozen matches, to be honest. 7 passes a minute, I think I averaged that out to. For Fulham, 65% possession. It's indicative of the culture that Jukanovic has created. We're going to attack teams. We're going to do it with possession. We're going to do it with 1-2 quick touch passing. And we're going to ask lots of questions to the opposition. And we're doing it against the top teams. So it does bode well. The thing now, of course, is when you have this much possession, teams are going to know what you're going to do. So now a couple of things you want to do. You want to be able to put it to bed like we did against Reading and Huddersfield. Just, get a goal, get a second, finish it off. And secondly, try and eliminate those daft errors at the back, which are hurting us. I feel dreadfully sorry for our midfield and strikers because, especially the midfield doing lots and lots of hard work and dominating games, and then we give up, we lay an egg at the wrong time. And that second goal was a real head shaker,
Horrific.
And you know what? I'd expect Rotherham and Wigan to give up goals like that. That's why they've got 10 and 18 points respectively, but not us. We're much better side than that. Or are we? Defensively, it was inept, and you could hear groans from the crowd. And, something I know Slav was working on the change, the training pitch. But if you can't work with what you've got to improve, the players that you've got. And it's a shame because, again, the stats point to a strong performance by our lads.
Okay, very good. Craig, over to you. Interesting. I was looking at it. I have these two thoughts, and I'm curious if you agree with me on this. The stats show our dominance, especially in possession and shots. But I think they also indicate the game plan of Derby County. They played it a certain way, and they were able to take advantage of their opportunity. So I can see a little bit of both in the stats. Do you see that?
No, I think that's exactly correct, Russ. We play a high-risk strategy. It's built around possession. It requires a very high level of technical proficiency. We play up from the back. We play a lot of short passes, but it does mean we're vulnerable to two things: the quick counterattack with a through ball, as well as errors in passing the ball out from the back, and the susceptibility to goalkeeper or defender errors. And we saw a little bit of that in this game, with a couple of near misses, as well as including the first goal. I think the second goal was more a function of just switching off. It reminded me of last season when we allowed so many goals on set pieces. It was an unpleasant reminder of last season. But look, let's take the positive. We were playing positive football at a very high level, entertaining to watch, some really excellent players. And the style has its own benefits. I'm not sure that if we weren't playing such a possession-oriented style, do we have the players in the back who could sustain, for example, a lot of pressure from other teams. I'm not sure that's the case. So this possession-oriented style is designed to, offer fewer opportunities to score for the opposition. The only problem is that those opportunities tend to be more promising than we might otherwise like.
Okay, excellent there, my friend. All right, Dan, over to you. What stands out to you from the full-time stats, my friend?
Well, I think the most depressing one, the guys have talked about it, the most depressing one is two shots on target for Derby and two goals. I mean, that really says it all, and there's no explanation. And I assume the stat counters, and I'm not one of them in terms of compiling statistics, so I guess we'd have to ask Tony Khan. But I assume the stat counters are ignoring the shot from Johnny Russell that Button did save, because it was probably heading off target.
That's a good point there, Dan. That's a good point.
I don't know, because from where I was sat, I was sitting in the Hammersmith end, as you know, Russ. I couldn't quite tell whether that was goal bound or not. But when you looked at the replay, it looked like it was going wide. It was still a very good save from Button.
Oh, it was, yeah.
But you know, it didn't feature in the final tally. And I checked a few newspapers and various sites that use the official statistics, and they all had Derby scoring twice from two openings, and that just says everything about it, doesn't it?
You know, it does, Dan.
We've very nearly played the perfect defensive game, apart from the fact that there are two calamitous mistakes. You know, Sigurdsson does not need to go off his feet to try and retrieve that pass from Johnny Russell. He can get there, I think, by just staying upright, and they tell you not to go to ground. But he does, and it ricochets in the air, and it leaves it nicely for Ince. And as the guys have already dissected that corner. But you know, the other thing, the final possession count is staggering.
Yeah.
And we are still enjoying oceans of possession in this league against very good sides. It's what you do with it that counts, and gradually, as some of our players get more accustomed to this league and to the system that they play, and the movement becomes more more varied, then I think we'll see some improvements in the final third. That's the one thing where I was a little bit disappointed. We were far too static, those front three players, in the final third, in terms of posing problems for the centre-halves. You want your forwards, if they're going to interchange, to drag the centre-halves, two physical, hulking, great units for Derby, into places where they don't want to go. Take the centre-back out to the left wing. Take the other centre-back out to the right wing. Make some space for people to run into. And I don't think we did that enough.
That's a great point there, Dan. Thank you for sharing that. Before we get to man of the match and rating Savica, I want to go back to you. I don't want this to be a David Button bashing show, but could he have done better on the first goal?
Sorry, are you asking me, Russ?
Yes, I'm asking you, Dan. I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. I thought so, for the simple reason that goalkeeper was my position. I was never particularly good at it. So it was very, very varied. But the little bit of coaching that I had said that when somebody's bearing down on you one-on-one, you narrow down the angle, or you do something, even if the guy's running straight at you, you do something to distract him or put him off, or, you know, make it as difficult as possible. Let's get this right. The blame lies squarely with Sigurdsson for missing his interception and putting Fulham into trouble. But I think it was symptomatic of Button's the state of Button's mind and the lack of confidence he has. Earlier in the season, he would have flown out and he might have blocked it, or he might have been. I thought he showed Ince too much of the goal, made it very easy for Ince to slip it near post past him. Earlier in the season, he probably would have saved it, or he would have got something on it. And that's just where we are. But even though I've advocated probably now for a change of the goalkeeper, it would be very harsh to place Fulham's failings entirely upon him, because there are other people who are culpable.
No, very good point there, Dan. And listen, unfortunately, his lack of confidence is an issue. It could be also, like we're talking about, maybe a little bit infectious, which is not a good thing. But very good point. It's not just about him. It's about defending in general. You can't put all the blame on him. Like you mentioned, I'm glad that you you put the blame for that first goal squarely at the feet of Ragnar Sigurdsson, because that's where it belongs to begin with. Could he have done better? Possibly, but it really begins with Sigurdsson. So very good point by you. All right, quickly, let's go to man of the match. I want all three of you to give your man of the match. Dan, I'll start with you.
I'd be a bit perverse. I'd give it to Ryan Fredericks.
Interesting.
For the simple reason that in that first half, most of Fulham's threat came down the right-hand side, and he absolutely rampaged down the right-hand side. And he paced his game perfectly. He was up against a tricky winger and difficult forwards. And for a long time, Fredericks has had a problem getting through games. You know, he tires markedly. But he was the main attacking threat. And I don't think people talk enough about what he does in the final third. And there's a wonderful example of it encapsulated in that goal we scored right before half-time, when he takes on Marcus Olsen, who's not slow. He commits him in the box and beats him on the outside, where Olsen is going to be faster. And then, after all that, puts in the sort of cross from which you can't miss unless you're Darren Bent. you know, that was a wonderful bit of wing play, if you like, from a fullback. And it shows exactly what Fredericks can contribute to this team, what we missed in the first few weeks of the season. And I know lots of other people had very good games, but I'd give it to him.
See, Dan, I'm glad that you mentioned Fredericks. And I'm glad that you mentioned the part that we missed him at the beginning of the season, because we did. We did. We didn't talk that much about it. We should have talked more about it, because him coming into the team back from injury definitely was a help. All right, Craig, over to you. Who's your man of the match?
I would agree. I think it's Ryan Fredericks. I think the work he did down the right side posed the biggest threat. It's a close one between him and Stefan Johansson, who I do think really bossed the midfield and showed a tremendous amount of leadership. But on balance, I think the work that Fredericks did down the right side, especially against Olsen, from Derby, who is, by the way, I discovered the brother-in-law of Dirk Nowitzki.
Really?
Ross, you might be interested to know. Yep, the left back at Derby County is the brother-in-law of Dirk Nowitzki at the Dallas Mavericks. So there's a little bit of trivia for you. But no, overall, I would give it to Fredericks.
Okay. Yanis, how about you?
We went 66 minutes without mentioning Darren Bent. I think it's a miracle. You know what? I think it's a toss up. I'm going to give it to Johansson. I thought Fredericks had an excellent game, but I'm prepared to eat crow pie here, because when Johansson first came over here, I was critical of A, the acquisition. You remember that,
yeah.
And B, his performances. But he is a man on absolute fire right now, and he's just playing out of his skin. Fredericks is a lot of fun to watch, and as I said, he had a super game. To me, as a midfielder myself, I'm a bit biased, but Johansson I thought was sensational. And you're really moving forward, providing we can try and sort out that centre-back position. Obviously, Callas out for a while means Maddle's going to have to come in. I think where we move forward as a team with the critical Christmas programme coming up is going to ride with Johansson, because if he can carry on playing like that, we're going to be in most games and create lots of chances. I thought he was outstanding yesterday, so I'll give it to Johansson.
Yanis, very good, and very good by you for talking about that, because you did mention that before, but the fact that you can admit it wrong, that is a great quality, and I applaud you for going back and saying, listen, I got this one wrong. So very good by you, my friend. All right, Dan, let's now go to you. Let's now rate Slavisa, because I definitely want all three of you to rate him from 0 to 10. Give him a rating for this match. Dan, you've already said that there were some decisions by him that you have some questions about. So give me an overall rating and thoughts about how he managed this match for Fulham.
It's going to be harsh because I'm a big fan of Jokanović. Well, I think he got some wrong, so I don't think he gets much more than a 5 for me here. As I said, I thought the personnel were deployed in the wrong fashion, and we were slow to change that. He gambled a little bit by removing Sigurdsson and putting McDonald at the back. And I think that might have contributed a little bit to the lackadaisical nature of the marking, shall we say, at that corner and other corners, because it wasn't an isolated incident. And I felt like we were slow to quicken the tempo in that critical point in the second period. Parker is obviously a very experienced player, but he likes to play these little short, precise passes. And sometimes you need to be a bit more direct. I thought Cairney was a bit ponderous yesterday. And again, for somebody who's such a skillful and important player, when he's not on his game, you notice it. And I think you have to start questioning whether the goalkeeper is the right person to be in goal. And equally then, the changes he's made, one of them was enforced, so you can't quibble about that. The change for at half time, putting McDonald to centre back, I don't think that really worked. And to be fair, he had Humphreys waiting for some time. But I felt like this was a game where we could have taken the initiative after we'd scored. We didn't. And there were just many counterfactuals that you thought about afterwards about, had we tried that? Or have we been a bit more conventional? We might have got something. But, you know, there's a reason why I'm occasionally on this podcast. And he's a top football manager, isn't he?
He is. Dan, but you know what? When he gets it wrong, you got to call it that way. And that's exactly what you did there, my friend. And I don't have any issue with you breaking it down like that. If you feel that he did not get it right, you call it that way. So very good by you, my friend. Very good. All right, Giannis, over to you. What's Rate Slavisa?
I'm going to give him a 6, but with an asterisk. You know, the callus injury is what it is. I might be tempted to give him a 7 if substituting Sigurdsson at halftime was to send a very clear and direct message that he wasn't comfortable with the way he was playing. Of course, it would have been even more significant had he substituted Button, but that's a different thing. The the players have to go beyond the white line. The one thing, you know, I won't go on about Humphreys. I mean, he's I'm glad he got his little run out. But what sort of message is the fact that Matt Smith wasn't brought on, sending to the lad as well? Because Martin would have started had he not been, ineligible to play. And automatically you'd have thought Smith would have come on, but he brings Humphreys on. And sometimes managing, I once heard a description from a coach many years ago that said that dealing with players was all about managing energies and moving rocks. And Matt Smith hasn't had a lot of playing time recently. And we talked about Lasse Vigen and Corley Woodruff. Their confidence would have been shot, a lot of it being because they're not getting into the starting lineup. And Matt Smith's confidence would have taken a real jolt to the fact that Humphreys came on. And that concerns me a little bit. But, plenty to ponder. 6 is an okay kind of thing. It's neither here nor there. We got a point out of it. He was magnanimous and honest in the assessment and the result, but still work to do.
Okay. Greg, I'm going to give you the final word on Slavisa here. Rate the head coach.
I'm going to give him a 7. He had a real challenge at the start because he couldn't play Chris Martin. I thought he was fairly imaginative in having sort of Aite and Aluka rotating up front. He had a problem to address with Kalas coming off with a hamstring injury. And I thought the substitution in the second half, although not ideal, I think it was the best under the circumstances because Sigurdsson was having a poor game. I like the style of play that we have. I'm just hesitant again because I do think it is putting a lot of strain on the technical abilities of our defenders and our goalkeeper, and we may not have the personnel quite up to scratch for what is a very sophisticated tactical approach. I think Slavisa is a great manager for the club. I think he has improved the club massively, and the style of play is a delight to watch. I just don't know whether he has good enough players to match his tactics.
Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. Very interesting. Really appreciate that, Craig. Very interesting the way that you broke that down, talking about, again, the style of play, but do we have the players defensively to
Russ?
Yes.
Russ, you know the old. I mean, you know the old adage: you can't make chicken salad out of chicken shit.
Correct.
I mean, it's a very. Craig's made a very good point there because I mean, creatively, if you look at the midfield and the strikers, with a couple of tweaks, we may have the personnel to do it. But for the sort of high octane, high pressing style that Slava's looking at, maybe in the fullbacks, I'm not going to criticize Frederiksen Malone. I'm hugely high on them. But in the middle and collectively as a unit, do we have that unit at the back that can complement the star that Slava wants to bring in? And I think Craig nailed it there. I'm not sure we do. Yeah.
Okay, very good. Dan, I want to go back to you before we wrap up the show. I want to get your thoughts on this because I think we were already talking about it a little bit, but do you agree with Craig's assessment about the defense and the style of play?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's obviously a way that Jokanović wants to play. And I think Button has his part to play in this as well. It's very obvious that he was throwing and rolling the ball out a lot more against Rotherham on Tuesday. And I don't know if that's a sort of overreaction to suddenly being uncomfortable with the ball at his feet or worried about distributing the ball with his feet to the back four. I'm not as concerned about Fulham knocking the ball about from the back like that, because actually I think Kallas is a very good footballer on the ball. I think Mardle is quite assured on the ball. The problem comes, Sigurdsson looks like a rabbit in headlights at times. When he has the ball at his feet, he's not quite sure what to do with it. I think our fullbacks are fairly accomplished footballers, so I'm not as overly bothered about playing out from the back. But if you're going to do it, you have to do it at the right time. You can't you can't be slavish to your dogma, if you like, about how you're going to play, whatever the situation, because then you're going to run into problems. I actually think we've done very well to rebuild almost an entire team, and particularly the defence, so swiftly. If you'd have said to me that there'd have been that level of defensive improvement and there'd been that number of new arrivals into the squad in August, you'd have given me this position where Fulham are now within shouting distance of the playoff spots by December, going into that crucial period now, as the guys have said, I'd have taken it. And I'd have been very surprised, because I thought this was going to be another sort of painstaking season of transition. Fulham certainly did not think that. They want to go for promotion. That much is clear and obvious. So if you're aiming for the top six, you need to be probably just a little bit ahead of where we are right now. But the progress has been substantial. I guess we'll see in the window if Slav is unhappy with some of the ingredients he has to cook with, to take the analogy that the other two lads have used, and maybe he'll try a different recipe, if you like.
Okay, very good there. Very great show. Great show by the three of you. You guys were excellent. I've enjoyed this thoroughly. Very good breakdown of this match. So I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. But before we go, I always like to get final thoughts. No, thank you. Thank you, my friend. Thank you. And let's now go to final thoughts. All of us share our final thoughts about whatever you want to talk about. So, Dan, I'll start with you. Final thoughts before we go.
My final thought actually is just reflecting on the season and the position we're in now. Obviously, these games in Ipswich, where, by the way, Fulham fans are being charged a disgraceful £32 to go and watch the match on Boxing Day, so I won't be going. It's difficult enough to get there anyway when you have to shell out ridiculous amounts of money. But Ipswich, Reading and Brighton, those three games are now quite totemic, because it's just a little gap as a result of us not winning that game. You know, it's now 4 points, I think, to the sixth place side in the table. So you need to keep up this good run of form. But I'm encouraged, as I said at the start, I'm encouraged by the level of performance, if not the fact that we didn't hold on. So if we keep replicating this style of play and the quality of our displays, then I think we'll be up there in and around the playoffs, and that's a really good place to be.
Okay, excellent there, my friend. Giannis, over to you. Your final thoughts before we go.
2016 has been quite the year. And I think we lost many, as well as personalities around the world, beloved personalities. I lost a parent. Weather's been in and out. But the one thing that seems to bring us all cheer is following our beloved Fulham. And Slava has given us all reason to have some Christmas cheer. This is a team that we can start to be proud of. And the results haven't gone quite as well as we maybe have deserved. But I'm hopeful about the new year, and I'm hopeful about the transfer window. And it's wonderful to see that our club is going on the right tracks. And I absolutely echo Dan's thoughts about, 30-odd quid to go to a football game is actually, I find, abhorrent and reprehensible. How do you expect to encourage young fans or pensioners, for that matter, old age pensioners on fixed incomes, to afford to go to games when you're charging that much? I think it's disgraceful.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, Craig, your final thoughts before we go, my friend.
Not much to say. I think we're going to be put to the test in the next few weeks because we've lost our best center back. We have a transfer window coming up, and we have a couple of key gaps to fill in order to sustain our run. We're all encouraged by the way the team is playing. This is a good team. And in fact, I think that the results don't flatter us. I think we are probably better than where we are on the table and where the results are. On the other hand, we're going to need to get a few breaks in the second half of the season in order to compete for a playoff position. So my hope is that we do strengthen the team, especially with the center back, potentially a goalkeeper, and maybe one more striker. But let's watch the transfer window and see whether we can continue to play the way we are and just get a little bit better results along the way.
Okay, very good. Very good final thoughts by all of you. Mine actually, believe it or not, my final thoughts involve the state of Florida. I actually go to Florida often with my family. And I happen to see this contest by the club. I just wanted to mention this just because I happen to like going with my family to Florida. So there's actually an interesting contest. So I'm just going to read it to you. This is on the Fulham website. I actually put the link on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. It's Win a Holiday to Florida. I'm just going to read it as part of our 12 Days of Christmas Advent. Fulham Football Club, official main team sponsor, Visit Florida, had teamed up with a trendy Tampa Bay region of the Gulf Coast of Florida to offer white supporters an incredible opportunity to win an upmarket sunshine holiday for two. Traveling with Florida specialists, America As You Like It, one lucky winner will receive two return flights, 5 days, car hire, and 5 nights, bed and breakfast in the super luxurious Epicurean Hotel. Okay, and here is the contest. Answer the following question and complete the form below for your chance to win. Which ex-Fulham FC player also played for the Tampa Bay Rowdies in their football career? The three candidates are George Best, Rodney Marsh, Jimmy Hill. I'm going to give you a little clue here. The clue is this. He's a grumpy pundit, and if you know anything about this person, you'll understand what I mean by that. He's a definite grumpy pundit. That's what I'm going to say. And please do check this out on the Fulham website, like I said. And I believe this contest is up and going. I believe its closing date is December 30th. So please do check that out. Again, I go there often. Listen, if you can't visit me in Boston or go to New York or L.A., check out Florida. I just want to mention that. All right. All right, guys. Listen, fantastic show. Great show. But it is time to wrap this up. For Craig, Giannis, and Dan, thank you very much for listening to Cottage Talk.
Merry Christmas.